Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello.
Who twisted his head in a weird way, and Benjamin Richardson.
It was a head shake of approval. I was like, ooh,
it better be. Just because we're recording at 4:30 on Friday and nearly everything will go wrong does not mean that it's not an unprofessional podcast, Jules.
Yes.
So we'll see how we go.
Okay.
So going forward, and we've done it for the last few podcasts as well, we have the hashtag WCGP over on Twitter where you can leave questions and thoughts and different bits and bobs that you'd like us to get to. Now, we had loads of questions come in because we asked for them.
You should specify that these questions should be video game related and also pertaining to speak to one of
be.
Us. Because if it's just like, what's not this growth or do I need to get fungal cream for this? I can't help you, pal.
It's probably fine.
Unless that's a question directly related, like an adventure game or something.
Yeah. I think...
Yeah. Hospital.
Yes, oh, 2-point hospital. Yeah. I think if they just, you know, just said, what if? And then we just go from there.
Yeah. I don't need that existential crisis.
I do at 4:30. But the one that I was going to read out, because we also put out a community post on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So from that community post, we got one from Ross McCaskill,
okay.
Who we're going to open the podcast on this question, then we'll get to what the meat of the thing is.
Sure.
But this one is from Mr. Ross McCaskill, who says, what do you think the biggest trends, positive or negative, will be across the next console generation? And he cites monetization, single player versus multiplayer, indie versus AAA, etc., as endemic of this generation. What do you think is going to happen next gen?
I think that we're going to see a massive move towards gimmick peripherals again.
That's weird. I was going to say that I think VR is going to be a big rush
VR has really taken off. And I know that loads of people are still deriding it, saying that it's not going to be the future of gaming. Have you ever actually played like those fully formed games?
Well, I haven't, because I have issues with my vision. But at what point does a gimmick become just an established thing that we accept?
When it's the Wii.
Well, you're, yeah. Until you get a t-shirt, mate.
That's what it's made it.
You repeat it enough, and then eventually, when it becomes merchandisable, then, I don't know. Like,
do you think it's a positive thing or a negative thing?
I don't think it's... it depends on how it's approached, because if you look at the footage of that new Walking Dead game that's all VR, it looks fantastic.
I've not seen that.
Like, really good. Like, to the point where it's quite grim, actually, because you stab a zombie in the head with a screwdriver, but the game measures the force of your stabs, and it won't go in unless you properly wham it in the
definitely
head.
Need pressurized stabbing in my games going forward.
I mean,
GTA 6.
It's blurring the lines a little bit, so it'll be negative.
It's sort of typical. Sorry to interrupt you there, but the first thing that is used for is a measure of violence. It could have been a VR game about scrubbing your bathtub.
I was going to go with like how tight can you hug, but
how tight
cleaning.
Hug.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie. The first use of it was definitely over in the Japanese porn market, and I'm not just generifying there. That is literally what they
could have been any old porn market. Got to be the Japanese porn market.
Have you seen? There's literally a specific Japanese animation porn thing, and literally they were using VR and AR stuff.
Okay,
just porn.
Have we seen it? I think that's very much
listen.
Look, if they bring in the AR technology, then they can bring it into the world as well. But I don't want to see some sort of tentacle monster.
They call it
every day.
What they call it? They
go
call
on.
It ARS.
Good.
Ass.
Good. He's popped himself there again. It's 4:30 in the afternoon. Not to worry. Benji, what do you think will happen next generation in terms of the different trends?
The eternal pessimist. I think all the most egregiously horrible. Part things that we've experienced in the industry in the last few years, the monetization and the gradual decline of games as a creative institute, as they've developed into a service, paid for a service. I think that's going to be exacerbated and become ubiquitous, I think.
See, you'll pay 50 quid for a title and then it'll be updated in about 5 months' time with episode one. Yeah.
Oh, like the version of, it was like super early access that Devolver Digital made a joke of at their E3 conference, where it was like, as soon as you got a headline, like, you know, a main title of what this is going to be, start paying us now. We'll tell you what it is. is in the months going forward. So anyway, yeah, for the meat of this thing, this is a bit of a spin-off from the Chatty Face video that we already had go up on YouTube, which you can go across and check out, where we talked about games that we wouldn't play twice or games that we, for whatever reason, wouldn't revisit after we finished it. Mm. And I kind of thought we'd just blow that out. It's like, I want to get to that idea of revisiting games. Like, do we tend to revisit games quite a lot? And do we end up finding out that they were better than we thought, they're worse than we thought? How much has hype dissipated? How much are you able to sort of get a better measure of a game when all that those initial things have sort of dissipated?
Well, what? Nostalgia is like an amazing thing. It is the
best. Just seen the Sonic movie. Have you seen the Sonic movie?
I have seen it, Sonic. And I thought it was fine. I thought
it's weird because me and Benji absolutely adore Sonic and we thought it was a bit pap.
Yeah, but
I don't know if you love Sonic.
No, I don't love Sonic.
Nostalgia worked against us.
I got to Sonic 06 and then I stopped because I got reasonable common sense. But other
the movie's better than Sonic 06.
There we go then.
I don't know if that's true.
What are you on about?
It's not better than him kissing a princess. Are you mad?
It works for a start.
No. Anyway, carry on. Nostalgia.
Nostalgia is the best marketing tool that any single company can exploit. You look around and see how many things are 80s marketed at the moment, because it speaks to the widest demographic that has the most disposable income at the time of recording. I don't know if it's changed if Brexit has pushed us right on the cliff at this point. Mm-hmm. So therefore, exploiting that is amazing. But it can also be obviously very, very bad, because you can see your favourite stuff get absolutely ruined.
Which is why there's a great trend these days to remaster games from the ground up rather than just add polish and remake them.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is nostalgia goggles, they are blinding. And as we all know, we will sit here and be like, I remember X game being fantastic. And I haven't been back and played X game in a number of years. And I went back and I played GoldenEye recently.
It's pretty good.
It's okay.
It doesn't control very well.
That's the thing.
I'm kidding. I don't think it's very well.
I think that it's a fantastic game. Like, mechanically, for what it was, the controller that it was using on the platform that was on the N64, mm-hmm. I thought it was fantastic. But I just have been spoiled by dual analog games now.
It's the context. See, the games we revisit and find aren't as good as we used to think of, ones that don't hold up, and nearly always games at some point were considered groundbreaking or innovative. Yeah. And GoldenEye was one of those games. I think GoldenEye, alongside Half-Life, like really brought the first-person genre on from its typical, you know, its mazes and its key codes. It gave it a structure, gave it mission, it gave it more of a narrative. It made the environment more interactive. But now it's so taken for granted. I mean, it's 23 years since it came out, so now
good lord,
you're just left with a first person shooter that has very cumbersome controls.
But then it's like you go back and play some games like Doom, who you could say popularized the first person shooter genre because of how popular it was back in the day. You still go back and play that, and the speed of which it approaches it, the confidence,
Doom is still stellar.
It is fantastic. Why is that one held up and that one and GoldenEye hasn't?
I'm not sure, but I think it has to do with there's an obvious cutoff point when games move into 3D, and it's around the mid-90s, about 95, 96. And the games before that are all generally like perfected forms of a 2D era.
Yeah.
And it's easy to assume, because they're from several generations ago, that can only be played ironically, they can't be enjoyed. And you go back and you do play and think, you know what, this is absolutely fantastic. It's even better than I imagined.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what a game that I haven't played in years that went back and absolutely blew my tits off was
You better not swear, Jules Gill. We haven't got time to edit this after half four.
Gunstar Heroes.
Good.
Gunstar Heroes is brilliant.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. And at that time,
tits was a small bird, by the way. Carry on.
Yeah, blue tits.
Yep.
And it basically, you look at the art style of that, it's beautiful, like legitimately looks amazing today. Mm-hmm. And yet a couple of years later, you get like Grand Theft Auto 3. You look at it by today's standards because of a 3D modeling and what we do with it now, it looks worse because we're judging it on a different scaling system.
It's interesting you mention those two games because I've got GTA 3 written down
as
a game that's aged excellently in comparison with its sequels.
Uh-huh.
And I've got Mischief Makers, I don't know if you played it.
N64,
which is a treasure platformer. It wasn't a sequel to Gunstar Heroes, but I think it was the next project they did after Radiant Silvergun. And that's aged terribly. Enjoy it.
Do you find that when you go back to stuff, like, because I love going back to old games. I love like trying to immerse myself in what would have been the zeitgeist of the time. What was the big talking points at the time? And so for me, when I went back to Mario 64, I went to it for the first time, I thought that held up incredibly well.
I was on the edge of my seat.
I know he's literally loading a shotgun, but I think that the camera in that game was obviously very primitive. It was one of the first times they ever did a 3D camera, and it does tend to hang in weird places, like quote unquote, based on where we've come or gone. But I think that game still holds up because the mechanics, the physics, the momentum is all great.
I unintentionally replay Mario 64 every year.
Unintentionally?
I can't help you wake up playing it.
It's odd. I find myself, I'm in Dire Docks and I don't know how I've got it. I'll give it a little go. I'll play it. Something will inspire me. Like, I got a thing that... it'd be something that encouraged me playing Mario 64. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll just get a couple of stars. I'll do the first level. I end up having have to do it to completion.
Four in the morning.
It's so beautiful to play. Like, as you say, the control is flawless.
Yeah, I think that stuff can age better than aesthetics. But I was going to say as well with old school graphics, outdated stuff, things that you'll go back to and be like, oh man, I had this mind's eye version of this game and then it's the reality of it. Like some of the stuff that I find when I go back to old games, especially like Resident Evils or old Final Fantasies, is that the backgrounds are so blurry and you don't realize how far HD and 4K and stuff's come.
I remember going over to my friend Sam's house and showing him Final Fantasy VIII on his PC and he was just like, oh my God. And both of us were like, graphics will never get better at this. You know when like Quetzalcoatl like comes out the animation and like unfurls, we were like, that is so smooth, that is unbelievable. And like looking back at the same scene now, I'm just like, I can't tell what this is. Like, is this a ghost made of candle wax or something like that? I have no
idea.
That's
what Quetzalcoatl means if you sort of unravel the words. I was going to say as well, because before we came in, Jules, we were all kind of talking about like remasters and remakes and what makes you want to buy a remaster or a remake. And we had a whole thing a couple of years ago about like the validity of whether like the Crash Insane Trilogy was valid as a 2017 game. And I didn't think that it was because it was more of a glorified reskin. Mm-hmm. But like something like Resident Evil 2 is a full-on remake. Yeah. So it's like... you were saying that you find it hard to go back to stuff unless they've done enough to justify like newer things.
This is what I've... Because recently, Vanquish, at the time of recording, Vanquish and Bayonetta just had their 10th anniversary re-release.
The bundle.
Now, they are both ports of the PC versions of the game, and I just did the review of them on the site. I think it's gone live.
Oh, it's live, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And the biggest problem with that is that they are both fantastic games, and they are the best iterations of those games. But if you're looking to get something new of the experience, which I think that people will actually demand, because it's like if you use the term remaster, re-release or remake, you expect something to come with it to act as a reason or bonus to buy it, like a new stage or a cut content or something like that. There's none of that here.
It's like 60 frames a second in 4K, but so like that's kind of obvious.
But this is the thing, you're then just going, okay, I now own the best version of this game, which is fantastic. But I feel like somehow there's not enough to justify, which is so weird because I love both of these games.
Which I can really quickly contrast to the Devil May Cry 3 re-release on Switch, the special edition, because they've added the style switching mechanic from DMC 4 and 5, which fundamentally changes the way you play 3. And they've added a new co-op mode as well, where one player is Dante, one player is Virgil, which they never had, they've never done before.
And this is DMC 3.
Yeah.
Like that game is a long, long ago. Mm-hmm. Like, so.
But that idea of like, you know, I'm going to pick up this old game that's been remastered, like it does, in DMC's case, they've done enough to make it a new game, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Or like for me as a massive Devil May Cry fan, I'm looking at that as like a new release almost. Whereas Vanquish and Bayonetta, it's like, here's Vanquish and Bayonetta. It's the same thing.
But the thing is, if it was the Vanquish and Bayonetta, if we hadn't already had those PC ports and this was the first time that they were in 4K and were at 60 frames per second, I would be singing a very different tune here. It's because we've seen it all before and now we're just moving them over to the console.
So I had a PC. Don't know what that is. I've got it on console.
Some good games on the PC.
Yeah, there's a few.
Can't spell it.
I have to say, remasters of the types you're talking, always leave me feeling a little cold very quickly. At first, I'm usually wowed or really happy to see something I love presented to me in a much greater scale and in a much better package. Mm-hmm. But then I realize it feels exactly the same as a game I've played many times before, so why don't I just play that game?
See, that's what I was going to say about like revisiting stuff. Like, would you rather they just back? I mean, obviously,
just left alone.
Right.
There's a reason Mario 64 has never been remastered.
And this thing, you'll go back...
On the 3DS?
I wouldn't call it a remaster.
I'm just saying that will divide.
Not vouching for it, but they went back to it.
Because I remember speaking to people who loved Mario 64 and then saying, did you like the Mario DS? They were like, no, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, Benji, you tried to burn all copies of that.
Yeah, I do, because what they do is it's Mario 64 without the one thing that makes Mario 64 great, which is the control.
Yeah,
true.
And plus it's got extra stars and it's got Yoshi and all sorts of things.
But like... I tell you what is interesting is when you find examples of games that had to add in more because of like either limitations or they just couldn't do it the first time around.
It's a really great example. Now, you mentioned the nostalgia goggles at the start of this pod. There's an opposite. I can't think of a pithy phrase to describe it, but it's basically a set of spectacles that make you look back on old games and decide, oh, they were never good.
What, reality vision?
I think that's called the YouTube comments. I don't know.
It's the YouTube vision. That's exactly.
It might be that.
It's even though. like history suggests otherwise. Mm-hmm. So people say, and one of the biggest examples is Sonic. And you mentioned Sonic.
Oh, you mean that whole Sonic was never good?
Sonic was never good. That's an opinion some people have.
I think one person who wrote that article had it, and then they all just sort of jumped on it.
Well, I can't believe that. Why?
Not true.
Sonic was always good, but interestingly enough, the Christian Whitehead iPhone parts of Sonic and Sonic 2 allowed you to play the game in full 60 FPS and with widescreen significantly, and that was something that could not be done originally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it actually improves the game dramatically. So yes, there is an actual purpose for it. It doesn't mean the old Sonic is bad.
No, but it just means that that remaster bettered it.
It's something totally new.
Would that not be the opposite of leaving them alone, though? Like, if there's worthwhile quality of life improvements, then you can apply them.
Well, it depends, because I don't often see that we do get life improvement. Mm. We usually just get
the same thing for £20.
isn't it interesting, though, that like you might forever play those original Sonic games and never ever think about, oh, maybe this would be better in widescreen. Well, and then all of a sudden it comes along and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, like Sonic Mania was so large.
It wasn't until I played Sonic Mania that I realised that actually Sonic can actually be even better.
How good is that game, by the way?
It's flawless one. But yeah, I was going to say, like, going forward with the new systems, obviously the PS5 and the Xbox Series X, there's a big push for backwards compatibility and assumedly bankable nostalgia. But with backwards compatibility comes the assumption that you're just playing that original game. Although, the way that Microsoft have been doing it on the Xbox One X, if you put an old game in, it'll up-res it automatically. Everything will render way cleaner than it did before. And for me, it felt like I suddenly unlocked all these free remasters. Mm. Like, I put SSX 3 in, and it ran faster than ever before. All the menus look really clean. All the character models look really clean. And I saw texture detail that wasn't there before. And I was like, oh man, this is really, really cool. Mm. And obviously, there's like a side conversation around how much this generation has monetized those tiny steps forward. Like, the prototype remasters, which were just prototype again, but it's slightly cleaner for like £30 or whatever.
Like, I always worry, because there was that big discussion about why the PS4 was not backwards compatible, because Sony just said, like, listen, at
people
some point you're going to have to let go of the past in order for us to actually move forward.
And then within the first year, we got hundreds of remasters.
No one will let go of it. No one will let go. And we will always call back to it and say, I want this, but looking better. But you end up with HD remasters and stuff like that that arguably are not necessary.
They're
like,
nigh on the same thing.
This is the thing. I will get into a lot of trouble, I would say, with some Zelda fans
on the streets.
A lot of the Wind Waker.
It's all right. We're not going to attack
was
you.
Was perfect the first time around.
I actually think the HD remake looks worse.
Yes. So, and that was one of the biggest selling points. They said it looks better. Not the fast sail mechanic, which actually genuinely is a life
improvement. They tweaked a lot of stuff in Wind Waker,
which is amazing. But when they were just touting the graphics so much, I was like, all you've done is add a bloom effect.
The irony of the Wind Waker HD remake is that they said, you can play this, but you don't have to fanny about as much as you used to. It's got less than it did before.
Yeah.
Isn't that brilliant?
Oh, but the stuff it took out was so much busy work.
It's just interesting. Look, you can play it now with a smaller map.
If anything, they sort of took a bit of stuff out and then still charged like a premium for it. But
what are your favourite remasters that have come out then?
I'm going to get that Devil May Cry one tonight, but I don't know. I'm really that excited for a remaster, because I treat a baseline remaster, I treat that as a way to do backwards compatibility. And it's like, I eat the cost of it. I don't buy that many of them, but I sort of eat the cost of it, and I'll play Jack and Daxter for a bit or something. Mm. But it's more just about accessibility. I tend to think of it in terms of building a library. Like, I already own like X number of old games, but I want them digitally so that licenses forever. And I go and get like the Jack and Daxter trilogy or whatever, and go back through like a bit of it and scratch the itch and go, okay, I remember this. I've satisfied. I played so much SSX 3 over Christmas. But that was because I got my Xbox One X. I don't know about you, but like, I don't tend to get that excited for a remaster, other than in the Devil May Cry 3 case, I was like, oh my God, that's going to change the way I play that.
A good example was Onimusha.
Had
the remaster, and I loved the original game. Mm-hmm. Like, it was one of the standout PS2 titles for me, and I followed the entire series all the way through to France and back. But then like, it came up to the remaster and I was like, oh man, this is great. I can finally get to play it like this. And it came out and I didn't buy it. And now I'm just that like, okay, what stopped me from buying it? Why didn't I feel like it had enough value? Because I clearly wanted it, because I love this franchise.
I'm mentioning, because we've got like some specific games that we're going to get to for a bit, but it's worth mentioning Onimusha, because going back to that, I didn't realize how short that game was. Yeah. I did it in like 3 hours. Like, it's really, really short.
It was one of the very few PS2 titles that was launched with, if you remember, the purple-ish backed discs.
Yeah, I remember the double data ones.
Yeah, there were two types of disc, and one of them was significantly less memory space
than the
other.
That, yeah.
And Onimusha, unfortunately, was one of the ones that was that, because I think it was a launch title.
Oh, no, it wasn't a launch title, but it did have that Pebble Dust thing. But I mean, in terms of the way that that thing looked, like I remember that being an absolutely gorgeous game that I got so lost in, and it was like, oh my God, it's the Resident Evil engine. But then when you go back to it now, and it is so much the prototype that they span off from what became Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
And you can tell that it reused a bunch of assets and stuff. It's like, I think the first time we went through something like all the GTA games across the 2000s, it's like, okay, this is one game engine for 3 Vice City San Andreas. And you can tell that they've reskinned it and it's the same thing. But when we went through it the first time, there was so much hype around those games. Obviously, we were younger. They felt like, oh my God, these things are amazing. But even the release schedules, they were coming out like 1 year after or 2 years after. The turnaround was just so fast. But I don't know, going back to stuff like that, I have a renewed appreciation for them, but I also see some of the strings in a way that I didn't before.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case with them, because you were mentioning GTA 3 is one of the ones that's aged the best.
I think it has, but I think that's very specific to GTA. Simply because when I was playing through San Andreas, although I think the world is better than any that Rockstar have maybe done since. I actually found the
Liberty City?
No, in San Andreas.
Oh, right, yes.
I found the missions themselves. It was Rockstar starting to get into that rhythm of trying
like
to...
Like wacky mini games.
Yeah, but which at the time, games hadn't really done that, so I wasn't totally tired of
yeah.
it. Like the idea of a scripted narrative through gameplay was not really explored, so I liked that. I liked how cinematic it was, but now it's just like, oh God, just following a series of instructions again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I mean, something like you said with San Andreas, that was what kept those things fresh. Whereas I think if you go back to GTA 3, even visually, I think GTA 3 looks lush.
You can't recreate a wow factor. It's impossible.
No, you're right.
Which is why we often find that games launch titles and games early in a system's life cycle tend not to age very well.
Because when I went back to, for the first time, when I went to Mario 64, that still blew me away in a different way. It can't possibly blow me away in the same way because I didn't play it in 96, but like I still felt the progression of the medium through that game. I was like, oh my God, you can tell why this is such a big
really
deal.
It really is an outlier though. We're talking about a game that wasn't just a great game, it was one of the best ever. And it was widely considered the best game ever when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And I still think it is in the top 5.
I still think that thing holds up. We should break down some specific games. We wrote down Vanquish. First up, Benji, did you play Vanquish?
I didn't play Vanquish. Okay. I find it hard to say.
It's a nice slick... it's Gears of War with like rocket
Joel's
boots.
Joel's told me about it many times.
It's such a good time.
It's just fun. It's the most stupid, bro-heavy thing ever. Because
it knows exactly what it is.
Well, you say that it does, so? But then I realised that because this is actually a Platinum Games storytelling trope in that they have no idea of subtlety. They don't understand.
I don't want salty.
And the thing is that their storytelling mechanics are really odd. Like,
right.
the Wonderful 101 is probably the most digestible Platinum Games thing ever, or the Nier Automata one, but only because of the fact that Square Enix was basically like, here's the reins, we're pulling on them now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Nier still requires 3 full playthroughs to even get like a third, like an act.
But
like
at least it has a sort of natural progression from point A to B, whereas if you play like God Hand, for example, or even Bayonetta,
Bayonetta's insane.
Like Bayonetta starts you out falling off the side of the world on like a clock tower, battling demons and angels. And after you've completed that first segment, only then does it tell you the controls.
It does, yeah.
I do not understand how that how mechanically that works.
I think they want to hit you up front with just like, here's how crazy the game engine and stuff is. But in terms of like revisiting stuff, did you find going back to Vanquish that it had aged well? Because like, yes. I didn't realize how hard that game was. I don't know why. Maybe I was better when I was younger, but I do not remember dying in that game at all. And I died like 20 times last night.
It is a game that requires your synapses to be firing on full gear all the time. Because I have not played the 60 frames per second one. I didn't play the PC port. Right. I only played it on 360 when it came out.
Same.
And then, so it's a long, long time away. Went back to 360, played that quite a few times. Then this came out, so I suddenly got to see it fluidly. Mm. It was amazing. There's a few sort of like issues with the up-res that's happened. Like there's a few shading, like textures that are a bit weird and stuff like that. But being able to see all of those bullets in minute details just sliding past, I was like, this is genuinely
impressive. That stuff's great. Yeah. The thing, like I said, the thing that had passed me by, I didn't associate with its reputation over time was the difficulty. And then just the way that like the melee attacks are the same boost meter that you use to use your jets.
Now, I like that.
I hate that because I want to boost through a combat scenario, then come out with a boost and shoot some dudes in slow-mo and then finish a guy with a melee attack. And I can't because I used up all my boost getting there in the first place.
No, because the melee is meant to be your last ditch effort to get into combat.
But also, if you're on low health and also that thing is like your save, if you're on low health before you die, it'll kick you into slow motion instead. Yeah, yeah. But if your boost has run out, you just die.
I do love the fact that when you like do the slow motion and you're in the like death state, as it were, and you're like, come on, I just get the last few shots out.
I wish I had something where if you took out the guy that injured you, it gave you a health boost, because you go into slow-mo, you shoot some dudes, and then you're just there waiting for him to replenish again.
But that would have, like, that small tweak would have been an effective marketing tool for the remaster. If they'd done it so that you get like a chip of energy back, that would have fed into the whole scoring mentality.
They could have doomed it a little bit, make it more like combat chess.
Because you guys ever played The Club?
Oh god, the really old run and gun thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That 2006.
That had a similar mechanic, didn't it? Where it's like you shoot enemies and you get points and more time to go kill more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was like you were like running through a jail cell and you had to shoot some dudes. It's a bit like Manhunt.
Like, it's like an arcade mentality. That
Yeah.
Like Smash TV style thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of the things you had down, Benji, was the first Tomb Raider.
Well, I was going to talk about that, but...
Go on.
I've changed my mind. So no,
Fair dues?
I don't really get excited over intricate bullet detail in the way that Joel's does.
You're missing out. There's some good bullets.
I'll tell you the sort of game I like. Unfortunately, it's the sort of game that hasn't aged particularly well. I like...
He's going to say Leisure Suit Larry or something.
He might.
No, I don't know if that's aged very badly.
Very badly.
It was never good in the first place.
When the you know what, it wasn't. When the DS came out, was it 2005?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. There was an adventure game by a company called Sing, or it might have been pronounced King, I don't know, I think it's Sing. Mm-hmm. But it don't exist anymore, unfortunately. This was called Another Code.
Okay.
And it's a girl, she receives a parcel for a birthday, I think it's a 13th or 14th birthday, and it basically is a DS. And she has to go to an island for reasons I cannot remember, but she's trying to discover the mystery of her mother's either disappearance or death. And while she's there,
a 3DS.
With a DS.
A regular DS. Oh, sorry.
Which is some sort of conduit to the environment in a way that a lot of Nintendo games like to do. That
makes sense.
And on there, she meets a ghost called Dee. And of she course. Explores this mansion, and she just does puzzles, but which is all, it's fun. It's like a bit like Myst.
Right.
What made it so special is that it used the various interesting new features of the DS's hardware for its puzzles. So, for example, there's a puzzle where you have to close the lid to close.
I remember this game.
Did you have to blow on the screen?
You have to blow on the screen because there's a point where I think it's a keypad is quite dusty.
Oh, amazing!
That's good.
And one of the puzzles. Honestly, one of my all-time favorite video game puzzles is where you have to angle the two screens just so you can see one reflecting in the other.
Yep.
To see a button combination.
That's so cool.
It's innovative and really interesting, but it's all ultimately gimmicks. Right. So you come back to it and you're thinking, well, so many DS games have done this now. It's actually not that great. The story's sort of cliched.
But at the time...
Yeah, I was amazed because it was a new way to interface with hardware. It was a new way to interact with a game. And that was really exciting to me. It's similar to, like, do you ever play Zack and Wiki?
Yes. On the Wii? Yeah, yeah.
So would you ever want to play that game again?
Not really, no. same with Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg.
Billy Hatcher.
I got no interest in going.
Did you ever go, when you go back to something like that, did you ever have that thing where you see, like you said, a game developer going for a very specific method of control and it just didn't catch on? That one did.
Well, it didn't catch on because it went out of business.
What?
Kid Icarus on the 3DS. Yeah. That has, whoever designed that is a madman. Like, because you had to sometimes put the control, you had to put the 3DS down in order to actually hold it properly to get all of the buttons. I do not understand
ever,
this.
You like your Japanese RPGs. Did you ever play The World Ends With You?
That was the another Square Enix one, wasn't it?
Where you're basically fighting on two screens at once.
Yes.
And one is with the stylus and one is with the controller.
It's, okay.
And the whole point is to try and maintain rhythm between the two
screens.
It's really difficult.
Impossible. Okay. Yeah. Because it goes back to, I mean, obviously, like, if you cite like the generation that's ending at the minute, for me, one of the only big things that took off outside of like maybe Battle Royale is Dark Souls, was the Dark Souls control scheme that just sort of proliferated everywhere. But
well, see, I don't want things to become ubiquitous. I just want to see people be inventive and original. But once we do that, it's passe when you go back to it. I know Sing did a sequel called, not a sequel, but another adventure game called Hotel Dusk, which had rotoscoped graphics. Everything looked like the music video of Aha's Take On Me.
Nice.
But you held the DS like you would hold a book.
Right.
Vertically.
And
it was really interesting, but it was actually a very, very boring game.
Do you think that like those control schemes stand out because we know what they've become normalized as now? Like, I go back to Deadly Premonition and you can shoot with the face button, which is just horrendous.
They stand out because control schemes are so normalized.
That's what I mean. Like, they've become more homogenized now.
Yeah.
But it's like, are they better now? I used to like when every other game had its own control scheme. I used to like mastering a game.
Well, Rich is playing through a game at the moment where the concept is you get guns that are like randomly made. They've got like different triggers. It's all in VR.
Oh, okay.
Boneworks, I think it's
called. Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And you have to reload the gun properly. So like, if it's a six shooter, you have to pull it out and then tipple the bullets out and then put them all in. You can like quick loads and stuff like that. And I was like, that's amazing. That's fantastic. And now immediately I'm over it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just kind of like, okay, cool. So when another game does that, I'm just going to be thinking of this game and so on and so forth. That's the problem with inventing new stuff is that immediately, as soon as it comes out, it becomes a product of the time.
It's like it's like a roller coaster. You go on it in the first time, it's the best thing ever. And you think, I need to go on it again. Then you queue up and then it's diminishing return.
Things like they take it and run with it though. Like, that's a good way to make a shooter fundamentally work in VR in a way that it can't work on a controller. Because I think that
that's the point, isn't it? To try and use the new hardware, give you brand new experiences.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, VR as a medium is lacking those things, is lacking stuff that only works in VR. Like,
I would much rather have a well-crafted, well-written RPG story that is by the numbers in many other ways than being able to reload a gun in VR.
Why?
Because for me, I'm not like looking for the new experience, I'm looking for the best experience.
Oh, but that gives you the Ubisoft school of thought, and then you've got all the...
But that's...
This is fundamentally the best thing, but it's the same as the one from last year.
I'm just saying that there are franchises that have been very, very successful in repeating the same thing and doing it a little bit better each time.
Or you could blow on it.
Oh, you could blow on it.
True.
That always works in any situation as a last resort. But you could do the Nintendo thing, as we discussed earlier, and just innovate and make it the best at the same time.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'll give him credit where credit's due, because like, I have not played a Nintendo first party game and thought to myself, this is really dull, apart from Skyward Sword.
Oh no,
I've not played Skyward Sword.
One of the games I went back to last year, which disappointed me, was Twilight Princess.
Oh, you're gonna get a lot of hate because that's like that. Right,
I think anyone who goes back to that realizes.
Have you seen the those tier ranking memes that were going around like
the pyramid ones?
Yeah,
yeah.
That infuriate me every single time because
they're just designed for clicks.
Because my views are always different. I always feel like I'm stupid for not getting it. And they put Breath of the Wild as a B tier game.
What was it about it?
Everything else, like I'm like a double S ranked tier was Twilight Princess and
that's just
Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask.
That's like, and I'm not calling them out, but that's like when Polygon ranked all the Mario games and they said Super Mario World on the Wii U was the best Mario ever.
Should be called out for that. Super Mario 3D World is actually a very good game.
Yeah. No, it's totally solid, but none of them are 64 or Odyssey. Yeah, no, like, I mean, come on.
Was it Super Mario Bros. 3? The one where you got the world map?
Yes.
That's my favourite one.
That, you know what? I think that is my favourite now. Having replayed it years later.
Oh no.
Because
there's
another reason why you might enjoy a game years later is because you played as a child and you're rubbish.
Oh, Ghosts and Goblins or any Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Like, I have never completed one as a kid, but when I've returned to them, I finally beat it. And I was like, that wasn't worth my time.
No.
But still, I realized
how much of those like difficulty curves were just being really cheap to force you into either in the arcades, put more coins in, or just trying to elongate longevity through challenge.
Speaking of difficulty curves, Shigeru Miyamoto thinks Mario 3 is a disgrace.
He does, yeah. Right, I pointed that out to you.
Why is he turning heel? I don't get this.
No, he's always
embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
Why?
He just thinks it's not good enough.
Well, I mean, good for him in the fact that it's clearly pushed him to do bigger and better things. Yeah. But still, like...
Do you know when you meet someone supremely talented, I'm sure you know someone in this company, perhaps.
And yeah, you. You basically mean you. Yeah.
And then they say, oh, my writing's not that good. Oh, my music's not that good. And you're like, oh, not bad.
Like if his disgrace is Mario Brothers 3, then it's like, oh my God. But I mean, that then spurred him on to do Super Mario World. So he clawed it back.
Wait a minute.
Go on.
Okay, so this is a question to you and the audience.
Yes, they can't answer.
What has that man done that he wants us to think that that's his biggest disgrace? Because he's clearly doing smoke and mirrors. What has he done? Did he kill someone? Did he bankrupt a company? Did he steal? There's something that he's done around that time where he's just associated like, oh, no, that's actually my biggest shame.
Maybe there's a body in that cave where he discovered Zelda.
Dorshin the Giant.
I don't know. Okay. Oh. That's held up as like a hidden gem.
Yeah, but he looks
like... Anything.
He's got a little organ going on.
Yeah, but the thing is like every single 64 double D game is held up as a gem because no one played it. It's
64
like,
double D.
That's what it was.
The DD,
oh, okay, right. Yeah. Thought you were going down a dead or alive route there.
Mario Artist, Mario Talent Studio.
Good. Yeah. We've all played Okami. I'm going to end on Okami.
Okami, yeah, sure. I've got written down.
Good. What did you think of Okami when you went back to it?
Well, I'll tell you what I thought of it when I first played it.
That too.
I thought it was the best Zelda game I've ever played.
Have you played Darksiders?
No.
Carry on.
Yeah, but in Darksiders, are you a wolf?
No, but you do get portals that they took from the Portal franchise, yeah, and a really big sword.
But you can't paint.
He's got a hood, though. Looks
Okami,
really cool.
I don't
Okami.
Care.
His hood's really good.
Okami's such a good Zelda game, but Zelda decided to be
princess.
But I thought it was fantastic. Obviously, the aesthetic is just unbelievably, it's so resplendent. I like the dungeons. I like the combat. I thought it was charming. I thought music was fantastic.
Plus, you get to fight a giant armored fishbowl in the army.
Yeah. You know what? You do that in a lot of games. You do that in Earthworm Jim. You do it effective. But at the end of Okami, as you just said.
We should do a list on the 10 most aquatic bosses.
Or bosses that have been in more than one game. Just planning the hashtag content as we sit here.
But yeah, no. When I replayed it in HD a couple of years back, finally thought it's time. It's time to revisit it.
Mm-hmm.
I found it so boring. So much talking all the time. Stops you every four steps. It's sexist. Almost.
Okami is?
Yeah.
No!
Oh, no, trust me.
Amaterasu, no!
No, Amaterasu's not sexist. She's a goddess of virtue. It's the bloody Issan. Mm. Every time a woman appears on screen, he makes a very...
He makes remarks, does he?
Obvious remarks about the ladies.
He's a grabber.
Yes.
He's a grabber. Grabber Issan.
Yeah.
Tingle hang out in the same clubs.
I didn't know Tingle had his own game. Nothing to do with this whatsoever, but he eventually got his own game.
One where you collect Tingle's... It's rupee, like... Wonderland.
Like Rupee Wonderland or something.
Tingle Tingle's Balls.
Princess Peach had her own game, didn't
they? No, but they should do a new one where she has
where a shotgun. Where she gets emotional,
yeah,
and that's her power.
Yeah.
Well, if she can channel it, all for the good of...
Don't
humans. I just want to give. I want them to do the Rabbids version of Peach. Give that a gun in a game. Yeah, she has a big shotgun in the game.
Just give Princess Peach a shotgun.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for the evil version of Peach. Wapeach.
Wapeach. Weech. I mean,
out of my pie, Mario.
the Peach has a shotgun in the Mario and Rabbids game.
Yeah,
and she's really good with it. So yeah, that's kind of our wrap up of various different games that we sort of went back to, all the different thoughts that we had. And I thought we'd end on another hashtag WCGP.
Sure, go.
Questions. This one comes from Joseph Bowman. And what experience prepared you the most for working at What Culture Gaming? Now, he just said experience. He didn't say gaming experience. So you can put whatever you want.
When I was a very young child, I used to write my own custom magazines, my games magazines, me and my brother.
That's a beautiful thing.
We used to write them on the Amiga 1200 in a program called Wordsworth, named after the poet, obviously.
Good.
You can only have two colours, blue and black. So any tips I used to give them in blue and reviews were in black.
On a white background?
Yes.
Good.
No, on a black background.
I was thinking blue on a black background. I was like, that would be monstrous.
You'd only get blue paper in 1992.
I know.
It's ridiculous. But no, I used to leave spaces as well to draw pictures.
Good.
Nice. The first issue we did, it was called Computer Amiga Plus because it was about Amiga games plus other things. The first issue featured reviews of Street Racer,
nice,
which got 92%.
Good.
Oh, 100% rating is this?
Yeah, it was basically, like, I think I said, if you enjoy Street Fighter 2 but would like to see, like to drive as those characters, this is the game for you. Donkey Kong Country was reviewed. That got an astonishing 97%.
Wow.
Which, by the way, the original Donkey Kong Country, again, but it's difficult to revisit now.
Yeah, very, very hard to even look at, to be honest.
Donkey Kong 2 is fantastic, but the first one, no.
No.
We also had a whole feature about football games. Every football game ever released was reviewed.
What was the one that was on the Mega Drive? Was it Super Soccer?
The top down one?
Sensible Soccer.
Big fan.
Yeah, Sensible Soccer.
Sensible Soccer.
I was expecting you to just be like, oh, you know, it was like 2 pages long. It had a picture of a cat on. I called it a day after that.
This is Benji we're talking about.
Yeah, got into detail.
It was at least 60 pages.
Yeah.
60 pages. Right, by the time that you finished it.
Well, just imagine how long it takes to print out on a dot matrix printer in 1994.
One letter at a time.
94, yeah. Well, yeah. Might as well use your typewriter. Also, I think. WWF UK Rampage, we gave a score of 10%.
I don't know what that is.
You absolutely bowled on it.
Murdered it.
Good. But that prepared you very nicely for being able to do with the hashtag content.
It prepared me to write.
Yeah. Under pressure.
Under pressure.
Yes.
With a deadline, strict deadline.
And with charm and lovability.
My brother, I need that picture of Diddy Kong done by this afternoon. I've got school in the morning.
Draw it yourself. Jules, what experience prepared you? I guess I was going to go with gaming experiences, but if you want a lifestyle one, you know that.
Just robbing stuff, innit?
Are you stealing the living?
Yeah, yeah,
well, I mean, this is the thing. When I first started here, and I still do, I adapt a lot of other people's work. So basically, I was just robbing, you know, just like, the only reason I got a job here is because they caught me stealing mics, and they were just like, I said, I'm a voice artist.
But for the sake of disclaimers, that's not true.
No, it's not true at all. What experience have prepared me?
I was going to go down
I had to develop a tough skin because I used to work in sales and merchandising. Mm. So I got used to talking to people about stuff they were clearly not interested in. So therefore, it was very, very apt to then go and spout my spurious nonsense mm-hmm. to an audience that sometimes cares and sometimes doesn't.
That's how you get us to do all your skits.
For
these things suck thing. I'm just going to go down the general perseverance route. I'm going to cite all the other. If you want to get started in anything like this, it is just a case of doing as much of it as possible. So for me, it was just I had my own blog. I would have got out and review as many movies as possible, as many albums as possible.
I can add to that as well. A lot of people think, how do I become a writer? What do I need to be? Do I need to study? Do I need to read? Write. Because literally, and then you're a writer.
The amount of times that people say to me, oh, I've written this but not submitted it, I have to be really harsh and say, like, you've not actually written anything then, because it doesn't exist until you
put like
it
Schrodinger's content.
Like, you've got to put it somewhere and it won't be your best work. You have to accept that it will be criticised. It won't be loved by
everyone. Oh, yeah, be so open to criticism.
Like, you'll notice spelling mistakes, you'll notice grammatical errors. That is fine because it is out there.
But accept it as well.
And then you move on from it. Yeah.
Well, then you make a video out of it and then you keep going.
But I'll say another life story that got me ready for this is that I had a negative experience with somebody saying that they didn't see the point in me doing videos on video games and my own YouTube channel and stuff like that. And that spurred me on to carry on doing more than ever.
That's like your final boss.
Yeah, very much so. So I didn't do it solely to spite that person, but I did it with that in mind.
Yeah. But I think if this question was remotely put together under the guise of how do I get it going in this thing, I think all of us just love video games, love writing, love creating stuff. Like, we have that, we need to get our thoughts out there, whether it's in audible form or whatever. And I think if you just do that in any form, it'll get you off the ground.
Yeah, don't be afraid to work with other people as well. I feel like this is the one strength of What Culture that most other companies and situations of YouTube influencers don't necessarily have, or writing staff, is that they work in solitary. They don't work as part of a unit that is producing
something. We ain't got no cubicles.
Like, now we work, we share ideas, we move together, and if they're struggling, people help each other. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was able to do that when I was working freelance, know that I could go and speak to somebody for advice and peer-to-peer mentoring sort of thing, I would have advanced so much quicker in this business.
Yeah.
But you struggle alone often, so just...
Yeah, I think a lot of it is team effort stuff. Mm-hmm. But even though the examples that we gave were... We were isolated initially. Like I said, working on my own website, or you doing your homegrown... I guess you're working with your brother and stuff. But things only got bigger and you started working as more.
Wait, hold on a minute. You were 8 and you did this 60-page thing?
No, I was 5. He was 8.
It did very well.
93. No, it would have been about 6. Been 6.
The word prodigy is usually used.
It's usually misused to describe me.
Well, now we're referring to him as the Adonis Benjamin Richardson.
That's something different, but also true.
It's true. So, but now this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. Head over to Twitter and you can use the hashtag WCGP to leave all sorts of questions and thoughts and bits and bobs you'd like us to touch on next time round. But for now, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Benjamin Richardson.
Thank you.
The little Adonis. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.